Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
This is the Scummy Mummies podcast.
Hello and welcome to the Scummy Mummies podcast. It's me, Helen Thorne.
And it's me, Ellie Gibson.
And today we are joined by Miranda Sawyer.
It's me, Miranda Sawyer.
Hooray!
Oh, we're so happy to have you, aren't we, Helen?
We are so excited. It's almost like Ofsted's in.
Really? Yes, it is. I'm taking notes.
She is. She
yeah.
is.
Yeah, because of course what this woman knows about doesn't know about podcasts.
I know.
Is small.
Exactly. It's very small. Tiny, teeny tiny.
Yeah. Yeah. Why do you like podcasts so much?
Well, really, to be honest, I've been writing about radio for about 10 years, and there was a point where I thought, I'm a bit bored of radio now. I've reviewed Radio 4, which is, you know, I write for The Observer, so you do a lot of Radio 4.
Mm.
And, you know, fantastic institution, but once you've reviewed, you know, a kind of year's worth, it does carry on, you know, it doesn't really change that much.
Yeah, the finishes.
And so,
Melvin Bragg is actually 480 years old. A lot of the things he's talking about, he was there.
But if you think about the schedule of Radio 4, it just doesn't alter that much.
Yeah.
So no. I was getting a bit like, oh, and then podcasts came along and I was thinking, oh, this is brilliant. And there
awesome.
Was also great. And they're kind of the Observer audience, do you know what I mean? So they're, you know, amazingly intelligent podcasts from America and all that stuff. And,
us.
And you too.
Yeah.
And also, I'm sure you agree with this, that podcasts generally have got better, haven't they? So they started off, and I don't include you two in this, but there's a lot of, because it was mostly men, there's a lot of kind of two men podcasts where they just sit around and kind of goof about films or something. And
yeah.
That was fine, but actually not very inclusive. Mm. And it's not like that now. There's loads of other ones. Or even the people that are just doing the two men goofing off have possibly listened to other podcasts and realised they should be a bit more welcoming.
Yeah.
And they've got a lot better.
And there's not more ones about murder. That's what I like.
Yes,
I love
loads
murder
of murder
podcast.
I was literally listening to a murder podcast as I was coming over. That's how dedicated I am.
That's right.
Good way to start the day.
Yeah, and just warm yourself up with a bit of murder before hitting the Scummy Mummies. I like it.
Yeah, relaxing.
Cool. Now, apart from being like the godmother of podcasts in a way, the nurturing godmother, you're an author, you're a journalist. You're a 90s music doyen, should we say that? And
I went out a lot.
She did. And I want to say very proudly, you're a South Londoner.
I am, very much so, yes. I have never lived anywhere other than, like, I've lived in Manchester and then I went to university. And then I lived in London. And I started off in Clapham Junction, which was it was before it was Nappy Valley. So I lived on the very road that is Nappy Valley now, which is called Northcote Road. And now, if you go there, it's amazing. They've got a really brilliant charity shop, I'd just like to say, Farrah, really good. And so I lived on Northcote Road, and then the flat burned down.
So rock and roll, Miranda.
So South London.
So the entire flat burned down. So then I went away for a bit and then came back and thought, I'll move to Brixton because that was the place that I liked the best in South London. And also I worked out that if you live in London and you're a freelancer, you need to have somewhere that's lively during the day because otherwise you just feel like a complete loser.
Yeah.
Because you go out and everybody's out, you know, and they're, you know, you're left with, I don't know, you're left with no one really other than, I don't know, some nannies or something. And you feel like nothing's going on. But in Brixton, it's just lively all the time.
24/7.
So you never feel like, you know, you're missing out. You just feel like you're fine.
Always a party.
And more lively than Clapham, I would argue. Because before Clapham was Nappy Valley as it is now, it was literally Nappy Valley. It's where all the posh people of London used to throw their dirty nappies. But they excavated it, put in some baristas. And now look at it. So tell us about your family.
Okay, so I am married. I have two kids who are now... Oh, God, isn't that awful? You know when you have to think? If you're like, oh, lovely children. They're 10 and 5, but my husband's also got two older kids who are now... they are older, like early 30s, late 20s, and they're both married. And one of them has a child, so I'm now a step-granny.
Oh,
amazing.
Wow. How's that?
It's great. It's possibly the most evil you could be, isn't it? Like, not only a stepmother, but a step-granny.
Maleficent.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly.
It's brilliant. Eat my apples.
Yes, eat my apple, poisoned apple puree. So it's great, yeah. It's good. And we all get on, and it's good.
And your husband is a comedian?
Well, he started off, well, he did lots of jobs, and then he became a comedian. He's called Michael Smiley. Kind of during the 90s, I met him. 99, I think. Or we'd met before, but we hated each other. Soonish after we got together, he started acting, and now he's an actor, really. Yeah.
So it's funny because most people end up hating each other after they get married. You said it. So you had your children sort of relatively, I suppose, it would be considered
You can say it really, really late.
You were well old, mate.
How was that?
You're a mature woman.
I was literally like, if I take my kids out in Manchester, people assume they're my grandchildren.
No, really?
Yeah, definitely. I was late. So I had one...
Is that because you put them in one of those wheelie shopping trolleys that instead of a buggy?
No, it's because I go round with a little stick and go, oh, yeah. Can you just pass that for us, love?
Apples? Yeah, what is that?
No, so I had my son when I was nearly 39 and my daughter when I was nearly 44. That is old.
Yeah. Mm. Now, was that a conscious decision? Did you want to wait till later, or was it just how it...
It was kind of negotiation, I suppose, really, because my husband had had two kids before, and so they were grown up, pretty much, not quite grown up, but they were on the way, you know, so they were settled. And it's quite a big ask to say, you know, once they've done the bringing up of two children, to go, hi, I know you love me, but anyway, let's have kids.
That's right.
So there's a bit of negotiation around that.
Yeah.
Meaning that, you know, he didn't want them, and I persuaded him. But it took me quite a while. Yeah, so then we had our son, and that was fine. And then I think we just thought, oh, we'll have a go. You know, like, we'll see what happened, assuming that we were far too old. And then I got pregnant. And both times, this is awful, but, you know, it's true. Both times I got pregnant, I told him, we both burst into tears and said, what have we done?
Excellent. Excellent. Truth on the Scummy Mummies podcast.
Isn't that awful?
Oh, God. But it's true, you know, it's just, it seems like such a big thing.
But I'm glad you said that, because that happened to me when I presented my husband with a stick and he went, oh no, I haven't done my master's or I haven't done this. Yeah. I was like, okay.
It's an instant mortality check, isn't it?
I was like, oh, okay, but in the movies, in the rom-coms, we're meant to cry and hug and...
Well, we did cry and hug, but not in that way.
It's over.
And it's fine now. It's fine. There's a sense, isn't there, with when you become parents. I think especially, actually, if you become a parent late, that you've just walked into another room and that door is shut behind you and you can't go back. That's it. It's gone. Mm. So, but that's okay. Yeah. So bear in mind, I was nearly 39, so I'd had a lot of going out. It was a bit of a shock to the system.
Yeah.
And also he had colic, so it was a nightmare. Some people are naturally paternal or maternal, and me and most of my friends weren't, basically. A lot of people I know had their kids late, and it's because that you're not naturally, it wasn't like a priority.
You weren't racing there. You weren't going,
I wasn't saying, oh my God, I must have a kid by 30.
Yeah.
It just wasn't even an issue. I've done programs on teenage parents, I've done... It does not matter when you have a kid. Mm. You know, people say to you, oh, it's best to have it when 24 or, you know, 34 or whatever. And all these kind of things, it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
It's the kids. You know, you've got a kid, lucky you.
And you will deal with it.
And whatever happens, it'll be all right.
Yeah.
You have a child, it's fine. With you, you know, it's obviously hard if you're 16. Mm. And it's obviously, there's different difficulties when you're 43.
Yeah.
But it's still, you know, you've got
baby,
look
shit in your
hair. Yeah. I was speaking to a friend once who was knocking on 30 and I was about 35. And so I just had my first child. And I said, you know, do you think you're going to... He was like, oh, you know, yeah. And they were living in Manhattan and they had this lovely life. And I said, well, you know, wait a few years. Like, don't be in a rush. And he went, oh my God, you're the first person who's ever said that to me. I won't do the accent. I said, really? And he said, yeah, most people are like, oh, you've got to have a kid. It's the most amazing thing and it will just change your life and it's amazing. And I said, well, yeah, all of that's true. But also, like, going to a restaurant without anyone throwing food at you is quite nice. And, like, being able to have a party or, you know, having your own life or travel the world is also really nice. And the reality is you cannot do those things as easily or as enjoyably all the time.
And also, I think there is an assumption a little bit... amongst a certain type of parent that that's the best way to contribute to the world to have children, and I don't necessarily agree with that. Mm. Really, you know, I mean, I love my kids, but I don't expect them to be anything fantastic, you know. Mm. And I don't believe that I've donated anything wonderful to the world by having children, other than, you know, maybe they'll end up paying somebody's pension eventually. But, you know, that doesn't matter. I've got loads of female friends who don't have kids, who have great lives and contribute loads. I've got loads of gay friends who, you know, I mean, it's just stupid to say that if you don't have a kid, you're not doing something great.
Yeah, you know, exactly.
It's, that kind of annoys me. So anyway, shall we get rid of our kids?
Yeah, I think that would be that's a great idea.
You might have a kid who ends up doing a murder. Murder, I think, is a common theme with this podcast.
You'd have a great podcast, wouldn't you? Though?
Yeah, that is true. It would be
My Son the Murderer.
Yeah. Everyone should have a child so we can have another serial. That's what we're saying.
Who's going to be the lucky one? It's a Russian roulette.
Oh,
isn't it?
Exciting.
Make it me. All right, now that we've ended on murder with our motherhood chat, should we move on to career chat?
Yes! That's a lovely segue.
Isn't it? That's my speciality is the segue.
Jane Garvey is in the room.
I know.
Now, you've written for loads of publications, including The Guardian, Vogue, GQ, and most excitingly, surely your career highlight, Miranda, Smash Hits!
Yes, that was my first ever job. Imagine that. That's so
that
great.
Was my favourite magazine in the world for a long time.
Me too.
I'll be honest, it was mainly because it had the printed song lyrics in it.
Yep. I did also love very that. Valuable.
You could make up dances to literally interpret the song.
Yeah, it was quite good. Right. It was a really brilliant magazine and it was a really brilliant place to work. I cannot deny it. So I went to university and I studied law and I was really miserable and I didn't want to be a lawyer, understandably. And it was the mid-80s and everyone wanted to make loads of money and they were all awful and I didn't want to do that. So I was going to go travelling and then I went on the train to see my mum in Manchester and I bought a copy of The Guardian, which obviously I never did normally, and they had a media section and in there was my job. It just went, you know, pop writer, smash hits. And I was like,
That's all I've ever wanted to do.
Oh my god. I know, really small. I think I still got it somewhere. So I wrote them a letter in the style of Smash Hits. And I wrote it out longhand because that's how old I am. And then somebody I knew had an Amstrad. And I
464. And then 512.
I diligently typed it out. And sent it in. And what makes me laugh now is now I know what the Smash Hits office is like. I can't believe anybody even opened it. It was like I can't believe anyone read it.
Yeah.
And or pass it on to the editor or anything.
Yeah.
Anyway, I was then a cleaner in London and I got a phone call and they wanted me to come in. And I went in and had an interview. I can still remember what I wore and everything. That's how important it was to me. And I went and had the interview with Barry McIlhenny. And he said to me, he showed me loads of magazines, none of which I read, other than Smash Hits. I said, I don't know, I only read Smash Hits. And he said, Elton John's number one, should we put him on the cover? And I said, no way, you should put Brother Beyond on the cover.
Yeah.
Yeah, man. And he just had. Yeah. So,
and you were like, because in 20 years, Elton John's going to be nowhere. Brother Beyond are the future of music.
Beyond should be there. And he just put them on the cover. So I think he thought, okay, well, she's like a reader.
Mm.
And so then I came in for 2 days. And I remember I arrived at 9 o'clock, bang on, and no one was there.
Hello?
No one was there. I had to sit outside on
the
step.
You there with your satchel.
And it was on Carnaby Street. There was a shop called Boy, and I just sat on the step until somebody turned up, which was like 10:30. And then I got in and sat down, and I was really shy and nervous. And one of the editors, Richard Lowe, came over to me and gave me 2 weeks' worth of tabloids and said, rip out all the pop stories. So I did, and then he divided them into 2 bits and said, okay, write those up for Mutterings, which is the kind of gossip at the back. And so I did. I sat down and diligently did it longhand, and then they put me in front of an electric typewriter. This is how old I am.
Wow.
An electric typewriter to write it up, and I didn't know how to switch it on.
Nailed it.
So I got someone to help me switch it on, and then I typed it up, and the thing, you know, I'd never done any journalism or anything, and I did it. And in those days, it was before kind of, you know, desktop publishing. So what happened was that you had your piece of paper, it got sent off somewhere, and it came back in the Mutterings font and laid out like that. And then they literally got a scalpel and they cut it out.
Oh, amazing.
And they stuck it down with Pritt stick on and illustrated like that, and then someone took a photograph of it, and that was the page.
Wow.
I know. But the interesting thing is no Photoshop, of course.
No.
So some people, I remember once, somebody was really, really stoned and their eyes were really pink, like really, really pink. And the only way to make the eyes any better was literally Tippex. That's
fantastic.
Oh, I know. That's amazing.
It's so old school.
Oh.
Was it someone from Two Unlimited?
It wasn't, no.
Because I interviewed someone about Games Master, about a TV show, and they turned up to do Games Master, and they're like, can I get you tea or coffee? And they're like, weed. We want some weed.
Yeah,
and
I've interviewed them. They were
they really high?
Yeah. But it wasn't them.
So was it quite rock and roll Smash Hits then?
It was a height of Smash Hits power, so it was selling about 800,000 copies every 2 weeks. And pop was really big, so it's Kylie, Jason, Bros, you know, that kind of era. And also CDs were around, so the record companies were really flash. And so they would send you off on... You know, I got sent to Brazil to interview Sidney Youngblood. You may not remember him.
I haven't heard that for a very long time.
Okay, but he said, oh yeah, a lot. on his records. And I was there for about a week, and I interviewed him in Heathrow before we actually got on the plane.
Wow.
And then we had seven days in Brazil.
Now, Helen is quite a big Kylie and Jason fan.
Huge Kylie. Did you meet them?
Okay, so I've never interviewed Kylie. I'm really sorry about that. But she's notoriously really, really hard interview. Mm. She's amazing in photographs. I've seen her photographed, so every shot she'd have a different look. She's just amazing at photographs.
Yeah.
She's a great pop star. She's a kind of... I mean, on one level, I suppose she's an amazing interview because she never gives anything away. But as an interviewer, it's quite difficult. Jason Donovan I interviewed, and he was fine and funny, and it was in Pete Waterman's house, and there was a big tree going all the way through the house. That's what I remember. And Bros I did interview with. I did all of them, including Ken. And so I did all of them. So they were really, the two brothers were extraordinary looking. I mean, really, they were really tall and they were really beautiful and their eyes were like lasers. But they were also, I mean, I don't think I realised this because I was only young, but they were very obviously being ripped off. If I'd been older, I think I would have known. And I remember reading Luke Goss's autobiography.
Mm.
And in the autobiography, he said he wished he'd known the difference between net and gross. So their manager was getting 20% of their gross income.
Yeah.
And they weren't the brightest buttons. And they were a bit lonely. Mm. I remember going to Subterranea, that was in those years when you did go to Subterranea in Notting Hill. And I was with a few writers from Smash Hits, and Matt Goss turned up with his bodyguards, and he didn't have any friends, so he came and hung out with us. And I thought, God, that's quite sad, really. I mean, not that we didn't like him, but it's quite weird to be
at the height of the fame.
Yeah, to be hanging out with pop journalists when, you know, you'd think he would have loads of mates, but he didn't really.
Poor old Bros.
Poor old Bros.
Oh, they're all fine,
right? I think there should be a new charity, like Help for Heroes. Help for Bros.
I think they're fine, because I think Matt's got a residency in Las Vegas.
Oh, that's the dream, Helen.
Yeah, that's what we're wanting. Dream. In our gold cat suits one day.
All we want.
Without ironing board.
So what do you think of pop music today? Like, there's quite a lot of talk about how, you know, in the 80s and possibly in the early 90s, it was all quite arty. Like, it was all like Boy George and it was all... It felt like more of an art form, whereas today it is just, it's David Guetta, isn't it, doing his computers.
Yeah, I think pop music is fine, actually. I think there's loads of characters in pop music that you could do an amazing interviews with. It's just that pop journalism isn't what it used to be. So we don't have Saturday morning programmes where people can take the mickey out of them. We've just got boring cooking and football programmes. And we don't have a really lively pop press. So I kind of think there's loads of characters in Grime I think are really funny that you could do really brilliant interviews with, but nobody really does because everybody just treats them very, very seriously. You know, you could do, and I kind of think, you know, if you have the right journalists interviewing people like Rihanna or Taylor Swift or Beyonce or anyone like that, it would just be amazing. It's just that everything is so controlled now, and it really is controlled when it comes to people like Taylor Swift, that there's nowhere that's strong enough or established enough to bring a different side out of them. And the thing is that I think that a lot of the PRs that are around these people think that all journalists want to stitch these people up, and actually they don't. They want to make them better than they are.
Yeah.
I want them to be funny and brilliant and out there and mad.
Yeah, yeah.
And like something that came from a spaceship. That's what we want. And instead we just have to accept that, hey, Taylor Swift is really just a normal girl. I don't care. I don't want to know she's a normal girl. That's just not interesting. What's interesting about her? What's interesting about her? She's completely dominating everything. That's what's interesting about her. Make her mad. Yeah. And that's...
Speaking of which, how's Grace Jones?
Grace Jones is great. I've still got her phone number.
Oh!
In my phone, man.
Under girl?
Yeah, I changed it to Grace, I think. I interviewed Grace because she had an album out. Anyway, so it's in a lovely wine bar in Notting Hill, Julie's Wine Bar, which is a place with lots of different rooms. It's all sparkly. It's like fairy lighty. And Grace was hours late. It was a Monday night. She was like 3 hours late. And by the time she turned up, there was hardly anyone left anyway. And me and her manager had a lovely meal. And then we went into another room where she proceeded to basically drink red wine and order oysters and smoke.
Perfect.
She kept throwing herself around and waving her ankles at me and insisting that I put my hand around her ankle to see how skinny she was. And I could do that. Anyway, she was hilarious. And she kept going, "It's a full moon. I'm feeling horny." Like this. Which I just thought, fine. And then it came to the end of the meal, and it was now like 1 o'clock in the morning, and the waiters were really hacked off. And she paid for the meal in cash, which no pop star ever does. And she paid for it in cash, and she ordered two Sambuca, and her her manager wandered off, and she said, "Father, Son, and Holy Ghost," and biffed it, and I biffed mine. And then she snogged me. It's so exciting. She shoved her tongue down my neck.
How you liked it?
Well, of course I did. It's bloody Grace Jones. But yeah. Also, I couldn't stop laughing because I was pissed and it was Grace Jones.
Brilliant.
And it's just me? What are you doing? And then she was going, and she grabbed my tit as well.
Oh, hang on.
I know. She grabbed my tit and she stroked my face and she said, "Come back to my hotel room." And I thought, my mum's at home babysitting myself. Feel a bit guilty. And then she made me take her phone number and she said, "Fired it under grrr."
Amazing.
Isn't that amazing? And then she left and she ran down the street in this kind of Izzy Miyake please, please thing, with her arms out. And she was just brilliant. And then I went home and woke my mum up to say,
Mum,
Grace Jones has stopped me. And then...
What did your husband say?
Oh, he's thrilled. Yeah, I mean, we're all thrilled. And then the next day, I expected a phone call from the management saying, "Can you not put that in?" But of course, she's so cool. They were like, "Fine."
Yeah.
Nobody called me about anything. It's fine.
Oh.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50. Luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedy-ad-free. That's amazon.com/comedy-ad-free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Did you ever meet Madonna?
Yeah, I interviewed Madonna.
How was she?
She was really nice. Weird, huh? She was pregnant with Rocco. She was in her dark haired, slightly hippie phase.
Yeah.
She looked really beautiful. She drank a glass of red wine and ate crisps. And she was a bit late, that was okay. And she was funny. She had that weird accent when she's between English and American.
Oh, yeah. But when she went out shooting, yeah, when she was all established.
She was really, really, was massively in love with Guy at the time. She was really all right. With her, I interviewed her, and it was for The Face, and she did one other interview, which was a Rolling Stone, and Rolling Stone never sell their interviews on, and The Face sell theirs on. And I got about $3,000, and I bought a car. So thank you, Madonna.
Wow. Madonna bought you a Honda Civic. How lovely. Oh, well, do you think that's enough for career chat?
Yes.
Loads.
What have we got now, Thorn?
We've got book chat, Ellie.
Book chat.
Let me get the book out. This is what I like to do. Oh, so many words.
So many words. Look at all those words.
Look at all
those
words.
Believe
and I've highlighted it. I loved this book.
Oh,
should
good.
You introduce it since okay. It's your baby.
Yeah. It is my baby.
So what's it? We haven't actually said what it's called.
It's called Out of Time.
Right.
It's a midlife book. It was kicked off because I suddenly realised that I had less time left than I'd already lived, and And also I was feeling slightly caged by my baby, my second child, because I had her so late. And I was thinking, okay, if I calculate how long it takes me to get you through school and maybe into university, I will be in my 60s. Mm. And then, I was going to an OAP home and all these things I should have done with my life and what, you know, that. It's a massive panic. It's like midlife panic. And so that kicked off a kind of, I suppose, an investigation into that, what that means. Because all the midlife, I hesitate to call it midlife crisis, because you kind of think a midlife crisis is you just leave your family and run off with somebody, right, or, you know, that kind of thing.
Like, and I had a really, and buy a car.
Exactly. And
like,
I had a really minor midlife crisis where I didn't run off with the Polish builder and I didn't go to Thailand to find myself. I just panicked like mad and then said to Smiley, would it be okay if I kind of, you know, went off and discovered, you know, maybe I could go walking across the country and discover people that will kind of bring me in touch with my authenticity. And he said, yeah, sure, just take the kids. And I was like, okay, well, that's not going to happen, is it? So I better have my midlife crisis in a different way. So I kind of thought about all the things that were really agitating me. And I also thought about what it meant to... If you're my age, you probably had a good part of your youth in the 90s. And in the 90s, that was quite a particular time for youth culture. And what does that mean when you're older? Because I think that midlife crisis is a kind of general existential angst. Something particular happened to me because I'm me, you know. So everyone has a different personal crisis, don't they?
Yeah, because you interviewed lots of people.
Yeah, and I spoke to lots of people and I did a lot of research. But the books that are out there at the moment are mostly, they are mostly men. And also, women's midlife crisis has changed. So if you read the midlife crisis books that are around, like, the early 80s, they literally assume that you've got married at 20, that you've brought the kids up, and you have your midlife crisis because the kids have left home, and now what? And you didn't work.
Mm.
And there's a massive... You know, they tentatively suggest you might want to get a job. It's obviously different now, isn't it, as well? Because, you know, most women work.
Mm.
So they have, and to a certain level, they have a similar... crisis to men. Is slightly different, I think, but they can have a similar crisis to men, because what happens in your 40s is you think, oh, it happens to quite a lot of people, you think, oh my god, I did it all wrong.
Yeah.
I've done it wrong. I should have done this, which I could have done in my 20s or my 30s, and now I'm stuck in this job and I'm hitting 50 in a few years' time, and what the fuck.
Yeah.
And that happens to everyone, men or women, because there is a massive drop off when you hit 50. People, if you have a proper job, and I mean a job that you go to work at, if you hit 50 and you're not in a particular position, it's very, very likely that you'll be made redundant. I mean, it's quite...
It's brutal.
It's really brutal.
So, I mean, do you think that writing the book helped you work through it?
Yeah, like, definitely.
How are you now?
I feel all right now. So when I started the book, somebody gave me something to read, and it was like a metaphor, but it resonated very strongly with it. And it was like, imagine if you're playing a chess game, and you're playing a chess game, and in my head, I'm a bit drunk playing this chess game, and I'm playing it, but I'm playing it brilliantly because I'm not really concentrating, and it's a party, and I'll just play. And then I go away, maybe to the toilet or something, I come back and I look at the board and I think, oh, I've played it a bit badly. You know, I seem to have lost loads of really vital pieces. So I say to whoever it is that I'm playing, can we start again? And they go, no, this is the game. And I remember reading that metaphor and thinking, oh my god, that's exactly it. I've got rid of all, you know, all these chances that I had that I just cast aside, that I didn't think about, and now I'm facing the rest of my life with these really diminished kind of,
you've got a castle and a rook.
I've got, like, you know, one bishop and one knight and a queen and three pawns and like, you know, that's it. And that's how you have to go the rest of your life. But by the end of the book, I kind of think, well, yeah, that is it. Get on with it. It's fine. It's okay. That's the deal. But there's loads of research. Basically, there's a massive load of research that most people have a dip in their 40s. And they even in the... they researched it amongst chimps. And they thought it was possibly to do with money and stuff like that. It's not. It's kind of an inbuilt problem that you're happiest. Most humans, if you get to live a long life, which, you know, we all hope, you're happy when you're young and you're happy when you're old, and you're really down in your 40s.
But it is the time where you will have a mortgage, you are locked in, you have children, there isn't, you know, you don't have the freedom of,
you feel a little bit like you're revving on the spot and nothing happens, so you're losing loads and loads and loads and loads of energy just to stand still, and it's really tiring, and your parents may be dying, or they may be unwell or losing their marbles in whatever way, and most people have older children than I do, at that age. But, you know, you've got kids, and as they get older, you know, bigger children, bigger problems, you know. And you've got a marriage or a relationship that you may have been in for quite a long time mm-hmm. that might be feeling a bit stale. Those things sound... It's really funny. I think if you're not in middle age, those things sound kind of hilarious. Like, oh, that's really funny. Yeah. But actually, if you're in it, midlife crisis isn't a joke. It's really awful.
Yeah.
You know, it's genuinely like you think the only way of solving this is to run away. And that's... doesn't solve it. Obviously it doesn't. But a lot of people, that's how they feel.
Yeah. But it's the stuff that you think you want to run towards. Like when you're in, you know, your 30s or 20s, it's like, oh, well, that's eventually what we're going to get to. Like, I want the house, or I want the kids, or that's sort of what you feel like you're working towards. And then when you're in it, it feels really restrictive, and you feel like, oh, I wanted that freedom and that.
And also it doesn't feel stable as you think. I think this. No, I think genuinely in life, you think, if I just do this or this or whatever it is, I'll come to a point where everything's all right, where the kids are okay, I'm okay, my partner's okay, the house is okay, the money is okay, I'm successful in my career, and I can kind of sit back. And that just, I think genuinely that doesn't happen. Mm. And we kid ourselves that all adults know what they're doing.
No, because you're still same person when you get to 40, and you go, but I still feel 20, or I still feel like I don't know what I'm doing. On a daily basis as a parent, I go, fuck.
Yeah.
I don't know what I'm doing. I like this, but I don't like this. And you're just a bag of contradictions.
Yeah.
And it's about managing that so you don't go insane or fuck a personal trainer. So
I'd really recommend, don't do that. Don't do that.
Because that's one of the things you mentioned in your book, isn't it? That you said you had a friend who was a personal
trainer. Yeah, basically, yeah. And he's young, and he's very good looking, and he's obviously built, and he's 25. And he said he had to stop being a personal trainer for middle-aged women because so many of them try to jump his bones.
Wow.
People may be listening going, that is my new career choice.
If you're
there's a lot of hot 25-year-old men listening to this podcast. So I bet you.
You're welcome, 25-year-old men who are listening to this podcast. Yeah. But I what I liked about the book is that
can we just bear in mind that you read the book while you were on morphine?
Yeah, I should actually say
Helen is on drugs now. Helen.
I am on a lot of drugs right now. I 3 days ago I had an emergency appendectomy, so I am literally high as a kite, which I quite liked when I read your book, because it was quite dreamlike state. It was like I'd gone
to the chapter about the pink elephants farting rainbows, didn't you?
That's right. It was like a dreamlike state. That like I was looking into my future. I know you'll be surprised, but I'm 37, so it was sort of like going into
it's all right. We won't hit it till 43.
Right. But what advice would you give? I mean, you feel like you're at the other end of it.
Yeah, I do. I mean, I think genuinely I think that we all have dreams, you know, this idea that we should all work towards our dreams. And I think that's fine. We all have dreams. We're really bad at achieving them because they're unrealistic. You know, it's like, you know, we all have magical thinking. And I see it all the time. I see it in my kids. I see it in other parents. I see it in myself. So somewhere in my head, I think I will become rich enough to build, well, A, to live in a house rather than a flat, and B, to have one of those glass boxes on the back of my house where I'll, you know, like beautiful kitchens.
Oh, like Nigel Slater. I want a Nigel Slater. Everything just in jars. All jars everywhere.
Yeah. Exactly. So in my head, I think that this will happen, right? Mm. But actually, if you look at my circumstances, this will not happen. It won't happen because I live in London and housing's really expensive. And also, and very importantly, I'm too old to get a mortgage that's long enough. They won't give me a mortgage for that. And I'm freelance. So stop dreaming that. It's a load of old rubbish. Because you're actually not doing yourself any good. If you think, okay, this is what my life is going to be like, then you're just going to be constantly disappointed. Mm. And you're making a decision to be actively unhappy in your life. That's just mad.
Yeah.
And that's what I kind of came to the conclusion with. And I do, you know, really basic things like, you know, doing a bit of exercise does help. But then another factor is don't go mad. But those things sound, what I suppose I want to take seriously, those things sound really petty and stupid things to be upset about. But actually, they can really upset you. They can really upset you because you look and you see all the young people doing brilliant things that you cannot contribute to. And if you did, they'd laugh at you. Mm. You're not relevant anymore. And that's a very, very hard thing for people to take. Yeah, it's difficult. And there's nothing wrong with mourning it, you know. Just being realistic about it is fine.
Yeah.
You see it a lot in kids' sport, I think. My son plays football and I watch some of the dads. And they're just actively living their life through their kids so much that it's just... awful.
Yeah.
It's really tragic to behold, you know. I think also you have to acknowledge the times that you live in. So if you live in a time when property is really, really expensive, it's very, very unlikely you're going to be able to buy a big property. Or if you are a bit too old to make that promotion, it's not going to happen. So there's nothing wrong with that. You haven't done anything wrong.
No.
Unless you voted Tory. I didn't vote Tory. So, like, you know...
Oh, you fucked everything up if you did that.
Yeah, fucked it right up. I blame all of you. And, you know, you can't... There's nothing you can do.
I do like the bit in the book where you talk about festivals.
Yeah.
Because you were saying, oh, you know, people say that the festivals are for the young. But they're essentially set up for our age because they're expensive.
We have the money.
Yeah. They serve quinoa.
Yeah.
The pizzas are 20 quid and they serve boutique beer. And they're like, well, who are these for?
Yes, like, I really think that. There's a bit of kind of, I don't know how you... Like, young people are encouraged to be middle-aged, and middle-aged people are encouraged to be young. So there's a kind of, an assonance. It doesn't work. So the problem is that I think you look at all these young people, and they're told to eat well, be healthy, settle down, buy a house, get a great job. You know, which are middle-aged things, and they're told to do that in their 20s. And then we're told, as kind of middle-aged people, actually, you should know about this kind of music, and you should be wearing good trainers, and you should be going to festivals. And it doesn't... There aren't the lines drawn that there used to be, and that leads to anxiety. You know, there's a massive increase in anxiety, isn't there? And it just leads to anxiety, because actually, when you're middle-aged, it is quite hard to keep on top of music trends, you know, and it is quite hard to stay up late because you're a bit tired, and actually in your 20s it's really hard to get the money to get a mortgage and to settle down, because you don't even know you don't know yourself in your 20s. You know, and you certainly don't know
you're an idiot, quite frankly.
Yeah, chances are
you're a bit of an idiot.
I was a loony in my 20s. I didn't know a thing.
Yeah,
and so the idea of getting married and settling down is just...
She used to get her own nipples at parties. That was her party trick.
Absolutely.
That's a very good party trick. I blame property shows. I blame Kirsty and Phil.
Well, we blame them for everything.
Yeah. I genuinely think that. You know, just telling people that's what they should do.
As, like, and I think you were saying correctly earlier about Saturday mornings as food shows, and food's being sexualised. And you see people in their 20s on their phone taking fucking photos of baguettes and not talking to each other and not going out having fags. They should be smoking.
I've got a theory about all these. Think about all these things that people use in their kitchen. So, like, it's a spiraliser and the NutriBullet, which is made by... Magic Bullet. It's just ecstasy names. Have you taken a spiralizer? Because I heard they're great.
It's just
all the foodie stuff is what people used to be like about drugs. Like obsessing about the right ingredients, and then you're going to get them all together on Friday night, you're going to have a great time.
Yeah.
And you're going to really feel it.
Just do some poppers, chill out. Honestly. Oh, well, there we are. There we are, young people. If you're listening to this, go out, take some drugs, smoke some fags, have an inappropriate sexual liaison, and worry about spiralising in 10 years' time. Is that what we're saying?
Absolutely.
Unless you're my children, in which case drugs are bad and they'll kill you. Never touch them. I certainly never did. Excellent. Good. In case my mother's listening as well.
Okay.
Oh, well, that's book chat, I feel like.
Yeah. It is. Now, can I give Miranda my gift?
Is it one of your special lucky bags?
It is my special lucky bag. So I've read the book. And a lot of kids these days, when they do a story, they have a story sack.
Yes, they do.
And so I've made you a story sack for your book, Miranda.
That is so lovely. Great. Okay, so here we are. Peters. Oh, my God. Craig Lees Bross. This is the front cover of Smash Hits when I was working there.
And I love how this says pages 22 to 27. It took Matt and Nuke 5 pages to explain why Craig had left Bross.
Yeah, of course it did.
Yeah.
Excuse me.
It's a big deal.
Don't be sarky about that. It's very important. Oh, my God.
Debbie Gibson. I used to tell people she was my cousin.
Did she? Yeah. Can I just read my favourite sweet?
Oh.
Tangfastic. We were actually... My daughter said, what is your favourite sweet this morning? And it is Haribo Tangfastics. Anyway, I love them so much.
I like them because they're so sour that children don't like them. So you just eat the whole packet.
And I eat them. I eat the whole packet of an evening, and it's like a drug rush for me these days. That's how sad I am. That is a house. It looks like it's on fire.
That's right.
That's my flat on fire.
Oh, little model
house.
It's
a little cube.
Yes,
of a house.
That's your Clapham house.
That's
burning down.
To remind someone of a house fire.
Now, taxi cab. I used to have a taxi, and I drove around Europe in my taxi and slept in the back.
Wow,
it's great. And then I sold it to a photographer at the NME for, I can't remember, not very much, and he drove it down to the south of Spain and swapped it for a bag of E.
Excellent. Yeah. I once sent a friend a pink cowboy hat and he swapped it for a bag of ketamine.
It's nice, isn't it?
Where's my cowboy hat, Johnny? I've got some ketamine.
And here is finally, I've been acknowledged. It is my medal with 414th on it because I ran a park run and there was 418 people in it and I came 414th. Well, and no one gave me a medal.
I know. That's
only because the other four died. But, you know.
That is a really lovely present. I am super chuffed. Thank you very much.
You're very welcome, Maren Sawyer.
Let's finish off then with our Scummy Mummy confessions. Have you got one for us this week, Hannah?
Well, should I just say that I was in the hospital on Friday?
Yeah.
So Thursday night, Ellie and I did an hour and a half show in Hampstead. And that morning I'd been throwing up. And I was like, oh, I'm all right. I'm fine. And then ended up in hospital and had my appendix yanked out of me. And then got to have lots of morphine, which was really, really lovely.
And do you feel, I've not had my appendix out, have you? Do you feel kind of completely fine now?
No, I'm in a lot of abdominal pain.
Oh. Yeah, she's just very great. I mean, I drove her to Hampstead and back and did a whole show with her on Thursday, and she was, you know, she was, something was up, but she really did not go on about it. She did at one point say to me, do you think it's appendicitis? And I said, well, I've had my appendix out, is it on one side? And she said, no, the pain's all over. And I went, oh, it's fine, mate, it's probably a coil. So Dr. Ellie strikes again.
I just thought I had trapped wind. That's what I thought I had. But I got to have, what was a highlight, was got to have morphine given to me by one of those squirty syringes. Yes. I know, I think I was just starting to lose it a bit when the nurse came in. I said, hello, my opiate angel.
Miranda, do you have a Scummy Mummy confession?
Kind of, I suppose. My son went on his a camping trip with his school last week. So Monday to Friday, and obviously we missed him and stuff like that. But I didn't miss him enough to cancel a trip to Venice with my two best mates.
Oh!
So I went to Venice on the Thursday, so I wasn't there to cherish his little face as he got off the bus.
You were too busy having spritz on the canal.
Yeah, I was literally drinking Aperol spritz. It was great. And then got back later.
Oh, well, I think we've come to the end of the podcast.
There we have. Thank you, Miranda Sawyer, for coming too.
It was super great. Thank you very
that
much.
That huge stretch much. That you drove today.
Yeah, it took me ages.
From South London to South London.
Yeah.
Now, your book is out.
Oh, yes. Okay, plugging bit. It's out June 30th. It's called Out of Time. And it's about, they wanted to do a sub bit, so it goes, out of time, midlife, if you still think you're young.
Oh.
That's fantastic. Oh, well, thank you. And everyone should buy it. It's excellent. It's whether you're on drugs or not.
Also, you were far too young to read it. But it's just going to prepare you for the dip in your 40s.
Mum, I feel like I'm going to be all right.
Yeah.
Thank you so much, as always, for listening to the podcast. And please follow us on Twitter at Scummy Mummies, or on Instagram and Facebook, and we're on iTunes if you want to leave us a review. And we're doing Camp Bestival this year, aren't we?
Ooh. We are. We're going to be in the Guardian tent for the third year in a row.
Yeah.
And we're doing a Saturday night with DJ Sarah Cox called the Secret Mummies Wine Club. So we'll be doing comedy, as will the Sarah Cox, and we'll be drinking wine.
With the lovely Helen McGinn, who is Knackered Mother's Wine Club lady.
So come on down. And Bananarama's going to be there. So
no way.
I know. Yeah. We're going to try and get them on the podcast.
Oh, that's my real promise. Hoot.
They're
proper
hysterical.
Hoot.
Yeah.
That's
yeah,
be brilliant. That's yeah.
Have you got their phone number?
No, I haven't. I've failed you there.
Oh, well, never mind. We'll take Grace Jones. Miranda, you've been a brilliant guest.
It's
so nice to
be asked and to come. It's super great. And I get tankfastic, so I'm so chuffed.
That's you are very welcome.
Until next time.
Bye-bye. You're always all right in the end. That's my advice.
Exactly. Unless you are dead. But hopefully there's many years to go. I'll cut this bit out. It's just weird. I don't know where it was going. It started as a joke and then it went weird. It doesn't matter. Okay.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweater starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week.
Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.